Welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
We have allowed ourselves to become so disconnected and ignorant about something that is as intimate as the food that we eat.
Be prepared to grow your own for victory.
God said, I need somebody strong enough to clear trees and heave bales, yet gentle enough to yean lambs and wean pigs and tend the pink-combed pullets who will stop his mower for an hour to splint the broken leg of a meadowlark. So God made a farmer.
Well, hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Harold Thornbrough, joined by our co-host, Rachel Jameson. Hi, Rachel. How are you today?
Good. I'm doing good.
Great. Glad you're here. We're going to talk today about self-reliance or homesteading community. Do they go together? And we kind of want to talk about building community and just all about that. And I think there's a lot of places we can go with that. But I think we should just really start out with the self-reliance or homesteading community. But before we jump into that, how was your week on the homestead?
It was pretty good. I'm enjoying the much cooler weather. I don't know if you guys are getting that. I know down south, they're not getting it. I mean, much cooler. It's been 80 here, which is 15 degrees cooler than it was for a couple of weeks.
So yeah, we had a couple of days. It was just high 70s, which is not actually yesterday. I think it was like 78, which was perfect. I was working out in the garden a lot yesterday. It was nice.
Yeah, you can work without getting dehydrated and. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. It's been a very refreshing week.
I was out there picking. I was cleaning up the garden, just trying to get some of the weeds out and picking some stuff while I was doing it. And the neighborhood kids were out playing basketball on the street and stuff. And I'm like, hey, you guys want some banana peppers? Because I got about 10,000 of them over here. Well, a couple of them got brave, and I had some chili peppers growing on the plant too. And one of them took a chili pepper and just popped it in his mouth and ate it. I've never seen a kid's face turn so red in my life.
Wow.
He was in pain. He was looking for water. He was trying to find a hose or something.
I wish that I had your problem. My peppers are very slow and really? I don't even know how well they're going to do. Yeah. And I have learned to talk about hot peppers. I've learned the hard way to not cut them with bare hands.
Yeah, absolutely. It hasn't bothered me too much because I haven't really been cutting them up too much. I'm when I dehydrate them, I just cut the ends off of them, like for the chili peppers, and I'll just dehydrate the whole pepper, and then it takes longer to dehydrate them, but I usually just stick them in there overnight anyway and get them out sometime the next day. And because it's outside,
I should maybe do that when with mine. It'd be a lot easier than cutting them up wearing
because
gloves.
Yeah, I figure I'm gonna put them in the blender and just grind them into a powder anyway. So I, you know,
true. What about you? What have you been harvesting?
Peppers. a lot of peppers. It's tomatoes.
Maybe it's coming my way since cucumbers are going like crazy here. Maybe the peppers are coming.
Yeah, our cucumbers are pretty much over. I mean, I picked two yesterday and out of several plants, so they're kind of just starting to go down. I left a few on the vine that are all yellow and huge, but those are going to be ones for collecting seeds out of.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to think about that sometimes, but it's hard to think about it. I've saved seeds from a couple of things for a while, but I haven't focused on that, and I'm trying to focus on that now.
Well, I posted a picture I think yesterday in the group my garden full of everything bolting and going to seed, and tons of stuff, really more than I need. I try to act like it was on purpose, but a lot of stuff just got away from me and I let it go. And it's like, okay, you're going to seed. So I guess we're saving you for seed.
Right.
But a lot of lettuce, a lot of the radish, the broccoli is so much of it. I mean, I got all the large heads off the broccoli, and I got some of the side shoot heads. And then I just kind of let the rest of it go, and it's all in seed now. So in another week or two, I'll be getting all the seeds off of that.
Nice.
There's quite a bit of seed collecting to start doing right away, I think.
Yeah, I haven't focused on it yet. I'm working on it. I did save some seeds from dill, which because I've been trying to dehead them before they start themselves for next year. Because they tend to do that. I don't know about you, but mine tend to be a pest.
I've not really noticed it spreading around too bad. I don't know if I just pick it before then or what, but I mean, it goes to seed. But
I'm trying to let it go to seed and I'm trying to harvest it. And then I have a few special tomatoes that I, and those pepper, and then these peppers, certain peppers that I really want to get seeds from that are going really, really slow.
Yeah. So. How is your summer squash doing? I mean, winter squash doing? You seen any of that on the vine?
I actually have, and I was really surprised. I already have like a full size spaghetti squash, which I was,
man,
that thing came on quick because I got my winter squash in pretty late, even for up here by our standards. And then the rest of them have just started flowering. So I was just really surprised to see a full size spaghetti squash.
We got the thing that's blowing up here. I mean, I'm seeing a ton of them and they're pretty good size. I don't think they're quite ready to pick yet or anything, but they're good size is the butternut squash. I have a lot of those. And in previous years, you know, the squash bugs and the boar vine have got a hold of them pretty bad. And this year I planted them a lot later and I see zero bug pressure on them at all. I mean, I'm not noticing anything, which is amazing to me. I heard, you know, I've always planted them kind of early and I tried, everybody said, but just plant them later and you'll kind of miss that infestation period. And it seemed to have worked. I don't,
you know, I wonder what that cutoff is for us because I was frustrated because I got mine in so late just because I was busy, but maybe that was a good thing because I have not had any squash bugs. However, I do have downy mildew. We got all that rain and then it's been very humid and we've had dew every morning, a very heavy dew every morning. And so now I'm battling mildew on my summer squash.
Do you do any kind of organic treatment on that or anything, or do you just let it go and see what happens? I decided
to do an organic copper treatment.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that goes. Supposedly it's not supposed to affect blooming or anything. So
yeah, I've used it before. It works pretty good. It's not been a big problem this year. I don't know really why. I mean, the summer squash had a little bit of it, but it's, I've already pulled all that out of the ground now. So we went through all that and it's done.
I was hoping to get more summer squash. I will share the recipe in the Homestead Front Porch group, but there's, for the years that you get so much zucchini, you don't know what to do with. There's a recipe where you cut the summer squash up into cubes and then you boil it in juice, whatever juice you have. For us, it's usually apple juice from the apple trees or grape juice from the grapes. And it literally tastes like gummies. I think I told you this.
Yeah. I think you were talking about it last time.
Yeah. So it's really good. So, I'll have to share that in there, but the, I was hoping to get enough to do that. And they haven't been very prolific.
Yeah, it was the same way with us with zucchini this year, but the yellow squash made up for it. We had so much yellow squash. I was trying recipes of every sort and doing everything with it because it was just so much of it. But actually, we've used it all up. I mean, I was actually even feeding it to the quail. Quail were picking it apart.
Well, they eat it.
I just cut it in half and opened it up. And the ones I had in the tractor, and I'd lay a couple of the halves in the tractor, and man, the next morning it would be just clear down to the skins. They would just pick it apart, which kind of surprised me because I was had some that was just getting too ripe too fast, and I thought I'd do that with it. And yeah, they loved it.
I didn't know if they would scavenge like chickens.
Apparently, they didn't really scratch at it or anything. They just pecked at it until it was completely gone. Yeah,
that's good. That's good to know.
Yeah, so that's
now you're making me want to get quail. I want rabbits too.
I tell you what, well, if you're looking for easy, quail are easier than rabbits.
Even. Are they? Okay.
Yep. And you get the meat and the eggs. So, I mean, I feel like in a emergency, I don't always plan like that, you know, but people talk so much about the prepper aspect of it. Like if everything just completely went haywire, you know, what's the best animals? Rabbits are probably a better animal for that because you don't need like an incubator or anything like that.
Right.
Quail, Coturnus quail won't really hatch their own eggs. You have to do it.
That's right.
You need an incubator and stuff to keep them going. But where rabbits will just do their thing and you don't need any special equipment or anything. So, but if I'm had to pick between rabbits and quail, I would choose the quail. It's a quicker turnaround from egg to mature bird. And plus you get the eggs.
And do you have to compost their poop, I'm going to assume?
Yeah.
Unlike rabbits where it can go right on. Okay.
I do. Yeah. It's a little bit nitrogen rich, just like chickens. It's probably not as strong as chicken manure, but it is. Yeah.
And do they eat chicken feed?
They need a higher protein, a game bird feed. You can buy it everywhere. Like I get it. I buy it at our Real King. They have a game bird. It's for my, for turkeys and pheasants and all that. It's just a higher protein. And that's what they'll eat. Yeah. And
well, maybe really we're going to have to do a podcast on that, because I could ask you questions all day long on those, just those two.
Yep. I enjoy talking about them. It's something I've been doing for a long time, so we could definitely do that. Well, unless you got anything else to add there, I think we'll jump into our topic. What do you think?
I don't.
Okay. Well, let's just talk about this something that people often think are in conflict with one another, and that's self-reliance and community. Can you be self-reliant but be really involved with community? If you are involved with community and you're relying on community, are you self-reliant? Do those things go together? What are your thoughts when I talk like that?
Oh man, I like the idea of being completely self-sufficient. I'll be honest with you, because my husband and I are both very introverted and we enjoy our time. Just we're fine being alone for a long period of time. However, I think that I think ideally it's better to have a community and be interdependent upon them, because you just can't do everything. I mean, somebody gets hurt or sick, even if it's short term. Say you have, you have your quail that have to get moved, or right now, if I don't know if I sprained my ankle, somebody's going to have to pick up my slack with my garden.
Right.
Or stuff's just not going to get harvested. But ideally somebody picks up the slack somewhere. And it's, I mean, the bigger your homestead is, the more important that becomes. I mean, I had a friend who had a family health issue, and I ended up milking their cow for a week. Mm-hmm. And that's what community does. And, you know, without that, the cow would have gotten sick. I mean, that wasn't even like, you can't just not do it.
Yeah. I actually know a homesteader, and him and his entire family got really, really sick at one point, and they had rabbits, and they actually lost some rabbits because they couldn't even get out there. They were so sick. They couldn't even get out there to do the regular feeding and stuff. And there was other issues, and they just couldn't tend to them. And that's sad. That's horrible. But yeah, that could happen. That could absolutely happen.
It's a worst case scenario. Yeah, and I mean, and both of those situations are worst case scenario. And yet once we have things dependent upon us, it's our responsibility to plan ahead for those things. So if you have animals, I feel like you have to have a contingency plan in case something happens, because you never know. I mean, with a garden, it's not as big of a deal. Okay, so the cucumbers die.
Right.
But, you know, if a cow dies and rabbits die, that's obviously a
life changing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not ideal. I think most homesteaders really value how well their animals are treated. Mm-hmm. And yet for them, it couldn't be helped. So I think that's where community comes in. And huge.
So it sounds like you think maybe that they are two separate things, like they really can't work together, that you do sacrifice being self-reliant or self-sufficient to be part of community. But you think it's important enough to make that sacrifice. Is that right? Or do you think they can go together?
I think they can go together. I mean, I think you can be, first of all, I don't know. I think it's impossible to be completely self-sufficient, to be honest with you. I mean, I guess it depends on your definition of self-sufficiency.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I want to get into, because it does how you look at what self-sufficiency or self-reliance actually is. Right. If you think it is truly being completely by yourself and only using what you're able to produce on your land, then yes, that doesn't go with community. That those two things can't go together.
Yeah.
But when I think of self-reliance and self-sufficiency, I think about using all the resources available to you to be self-sufficient and self-reliant.
Yes.
And one of them to me is community. It is a resource. Since the dawn of time, when anybody was working, trying to tend to their own needs, there was always barter. They did things you didn't do, so you grew something and you traded with somebody. And I believe that fits right into self-sufficiency and self-reliance, that you can use that as a resource, that the community is a resource. And I just don't and I had seen this movement from some homesteaders say, well, we're going to call it community sufficiency. They don't want to say self-sufficiency or self-reliance. They want to say community sufficiency. And I understand where they're coming from in that. But to me, the definition of those things includes that. If you want it to, it can absolutely be one of your resources that you're tapping into to be self-reliant or self-sufficient. I even think it could go as far as selling things on your homestead, using the money to buy things, you know, flour, sugar, the things you're obviously not going to grow. I consider that self-sufficiency. I mean, it's you're right. producing everything on your property, but you're using what they produce to get what else you need in other means, whether it be money, whether it be barter, whether it just be through friendships and trade and or whatever. I mean, a community has a lot of avenues there it can go, but I think of it in that sense. So to me, they go hand in hand. So I don't have, for me, they don't have any separation.
I mean, there's things that I absolutely do not enjoy doing, but I have friends, like, for example, I went and milked that cow for a week and I thought to myself, I do not ever want a cow. I do not. Kudos to the people that love having a cow. My friend loves her cows. I have no desire to get one, but that's fantastic. I will do something and either trade with her or pay her for a milk share so that I can have milk. And I think that is a great way to have community, in my opinion. And I believe that I'm still self-sufficient. She's still self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. And why not help each other out and make my experience homesteading more enjoyable? Because if I have to have a cow and I don't want one,
yeah,
it doesn't make it very enjoyable.
Right. You know? Yeah. You supply your needs through other means.
Yeah. And she doesn't like to garden and I love to garden. Yeah, so, you know, we trade those, you know, we could trade those things. Now, right now we aren't because I don't have a lot extra to trade with her, but I'm just using that as an example.
Yeah, and absolutely.
I think that's what makes homesteading community the strongest is you're going to have, I don't know, maybe you're going to have the guy that not only does he have a farm, but he's also a really good welder, you know, and you need help. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't just have to be, I think of homesteading, not just as the food. I think of it as the whole,
it's a whole package.
There's the seamstress. Yeah. There's the person that's really good at, I don't know, maybe there's a chiropractor, you know, you know what I mean? I mean, there's just
whatever you need.
Like, it's like, to me, it's a community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to me, that's community.
Well, I think, so I think we do see, again, I think we would agree on that. But there's so much confusion about it. Like I said, some people just want to separate the two, like they don't go hand in hand to some degree. And I suppose if you were just gung-ho and you wanted to, and you had enough land and you had the means to go all out, but.
Right. I think historically speaking, I really enjoy reading about, you know, Laura Ingalls out on the prairie, just her and her family, or like.
But there were still, buying stuff at the store. Right. There were still barter. There were still,
Or Dick Kroenke up in Alaska doing his own thing, but he still brought in supplies, you know?
Right. Right.
Do I like that idea? I think it's a great idea, but I am actually not quite that introverted. I don't think I could go for like several weeks without seeing people.
I just don't think it's as hard of a separation as some people want to make it out to be. And like I said, I love being able to produce everything I can, but there's some things you just go, man, that's easier. You know, for years, this is how bad it was for me. For years, I wouldn't even grow corn on my property because corn was so cheap and so many other people were buying it that I would just go buy sweet corn from other people and then put it in the freezer, you know, or whatever, or can it or whatever.
I don't currently. I have a friend who grows amazing sweet corn and I'm like, why am I growing this?
This year was actually the first year I grew it and it had a great crop.
Right.
But all the previous years, I didn't have the room. It just took up a lot of space for what you got out of it. And I thought, to me, it seems better just to let somebody else grow that. And then I can either trade or I can sell my produce, get the money to buy it or whatever. You're still being self-sufficient, but you're doing it differently, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't think that either way is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things in the homesteading community that gets, like you were saying, people have a wrong idea. I think people we get a little judgmental maybe about what one person is doing versus mm-hmm. what another person is doing. And in reality, I feel like homesteading can be different. It can be very different. I mean, you and I are homesteading on small properties, and people would say that's not homesteading because we right. don't have these huge properties. I don't even have animals. And for the longest time I struggled with, I mean, we've had chickens, but for the longest time I struggled with, am I a homesteader? Cause all I have is a gardener. Maybe I'm just a gardener, but,
yep. Sounds familiar. I had the same thoughts, you know, in the early on, and the more I read, the more I really understood what homesteading was, you know, and actually worked through that definition, modern homesteading, we'll call it, because of course it has definitely changed in its definition. Yeah, I think we definitely fall under that umbrella.
Yeah, and I don't think it serves anyone and serves a community to make such strong lines and definitions and what is right. and what isn't. And yeah.
We'll always have those people though.
Yes, we will. Yeah. And you know,
for people with less land and are doing really less, community aspect of it becomes even more important because it is just less. I mean, I think it's important for all homesteaders, don't get me wrong, but it is even more important the less you are able to do, because now you're really relying on others to be able to do those trades with and get that help from and whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it is taken me years to find, you know, this is my person that does my corn. This is where we get our seed. There are a couple of local places that we prefer to buy seed from. This is where we get our meat. This is where we get our milk. This is where we get our cheese. You know,
yeah.
I have this long list of places personally, and I'm fortunate to live in an area where that stuff is all, I mean, it's not easy to find, but you can find it.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about building and being involved with local community, because it isn't easy to find sometimes depending on where you're at. But even if it's around you, sometimes it ain't all that easy to locate it. You have to get in those clicks and you have to get around certain people and certain things to find it. What would you say some of the ways you've been able to find local community in your area?
Over the years, cause I've been doing this for a while, but over the years, I might have to shut my door here. I got a excited dog. over the years I have, you know, the farmer's market, going to the farmer's market mm-hmm. is huge. I mean, you stand around and you go often enough, you get to know the farmers and where they're at, and almost all of them will have a business card, and mm-hmm. you can find out which ones are closer than others. I joined the community garden, and that there was a lot of people there that don't have any land, but they had other things mm-hmm. that they were, I mean, some of them were, they were fiber workers. So they knit and crochet, or they knew other people. Oh, this is mm-hmm. where I get my strawberries. This is where I get my peaches, you know? So, the farmer's market, community gardens, and clubs. We have a lot of that here. I don't know. It's hard sometimes for me to tell what it's like outside of where I live, because where I live is actually an area that's very focused on farming and the local things. So I'm not sure what it's like outside of where we live. So it'd be interesting if you have all of that, because we have like a beekeepers guild. We actually had a wild crafting guild, which is, if people don't know, which is going out and like mushroom hunting. And we mm-hmm. would have experts that you could trust do that, because it's obviously not something you want to do unless you have somebody that knows what they're doing. But, you know, we have all these little niche groups. Now, some of them have kind of died off mm-hmm. a little bit, but we had all these little niche groups. And when I had the time, it's a little harder now that I'm working as much as I am, but I would go to all those and meet people.
I think, those are really good ways. I have a friend that started selling at the farmer's market, and he started making all kinds of connections with other farmers. And next thing you know, he's getting free mulch and he's trading other farmers for things he's growing. And it became a real great little community. And I mean, you don't have to sell to make that connection, but he was just happened to be there actually setting up the market and developed some really good friendships with local farmers, local homesteaders. And it was a good way to build community. I've actually utilized county's local extension office. They have classes and things sometimes, and you'll meet people in there who are so interested in homesteading and gardening and things like that. And you make those connections and you build these friendships in those classes, which is kind of neat too. And I'll share a link in the show notes of how you can find your local extension office for your area, because you can just click on it and goes right to your county, your state, your county, and look up where it's at. And a lot of them offer canning classes, gardening classes, like master gardener certifications, all kinds of stuff. So there's some great opportunities there to meet a lot of people who definitely would fall into your niche there of homesteading and gardening. I think community gardens are a great way to do it. But I also think you can utilize some online things like meetup.com.
I have not tried that one.
It's an app you can put on your phone and you can actually find local groups. What I find is there's always a few on there. There is wildcrafting. I've seen that on there. It's whatever your thing is in homesteading. And I think a lot of things fall under homesteading, like quilting, sewing, fiber crafts, things like that. All that falls under. There might be groups for that. There's always prepper groups on there. Right. And whether or not you want to get in some of those clicks or not, some of them are good. I think some of them are, some preppers are not over the top doomsday preppers. They're just concerned about the future to the extent where they're like, we need to put stuff away, which is where I think most homesteaders fall.
Yeah.
So being involved with a group like that is good, I think. But there's a lot of them learning skills. There's a lot of groups about canning and things like that. I haven't been on it in some time, but when I used to look through the lists of groups, and you might have to drive a half an hour, 45 minutes to a bigger town or something for some of them groups, but it can be worth it. And you can make some connections through them. So I think it's a helpful resource.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure where I'm at. Several of them I've had to drive at least a half hour, some of them more than that. One that I'm heavily involved in is an hour and 15 minutes away.
Yeah.
But to me, it's worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, if it's something you're going to gain some skills, gain some knowledge, gain some friendships and some community with out of, it's definitely worth it.
And we have a small community college here that offers a lot of classes. For some reason, they have like non-credited classes that you can take. There's one that you can become certified in mushrooms, finding wild mushrooms and you take, stuff like that. So, yeah.
And I think a lot of those colleges will actually, run their, some of their classes through the county co-ops and stuff. I've seen like Purdue extension offices and stuff. They'll use, have their classes available through there. So yeah, I think it's really neat. I think that also just social media for local is huge. I mean, there's so many Facebook pages, Facebook groups, Instagram. I actually got connected with the Homesteaders of Indiana, which everybody's heard of the Homesteaders of America, but many of the states have a homesteader of your state. So we have a Homesteaders of Indiana that some people started, and they really, I think, started on Instagram. Of course, they got a Facebook page now too, but I connected through them on Instagram. Actually, they had a huge meetup about an hour away from here. And I went to it this year, and I wasn't there very long. I had a lot going on that day, but I wanted to stop in and see a couple people that I had talked to on there and stuff. And popped in, and this was the first year they'd actually done an event, but it was kind of neat. And I'm sure they'll be doing more.
That's
and it'll get bigger as it goes, but it's a great way to make a lot of local connections. Right here in this town that I didn't even know homesteaded, that were homesteaders that went to that event. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know you were homesteading.
Isn't that funny? That has happened to me a couple of times too. I'm like, I didn't know that you liked to can. I didn't know you liked to garden.
Yeah. I was actually working with a lady at the company I was working for at the time. And she showed up at that. and didn't even know she was a homesteader. And it was the funniest thing, you know, to find out. And she actually had a little farm. She had all kinds of animals and stuff.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even know it. So it was just, it's kind of hilarious. She just didn't talk about it really. So
right.
Kind
of, well, and right now I think, so even if you're not heavily into it and you're just starting, or you've only been doing this a couple of years, there's so many people right now just starting. Yes. I have been contacted by no less than a dozen people this year that are like brand new, mm-hmm. and they want to know where to start.
Yeah. And, it's huge.
People are really interested in it right now. It's almost like the, when was the Back to the Land movement? Was it the 60s?
Yes.
Or 70s.
Yeah, 70s, like somewhere back there. Yeah. Back
before my time. Almost like we're having another one of the
Back, I think we are. I think it's really been going on for a few years. Yeah. I mean, it just seems to be it. And I think right now it's probably in the last 3 or 4 years, it's probably more fear-based.
Yes.
Which, you know, is not the best way to jump into things, because you can definitely overreact and do things kind of crazy. But I think a lot of people also just the lifestyle, the health, the eating, there's so many things about it. You know,
I think too, like for us, it's the, even though we're busy, it's a different kind of busy than the life that we had before when I was working, you know, at an office. And it's a different kind of busy.
Most of the time it's an enjoyable busy.
Yeah, most of the time.
Although, say most of the time.
Sometimes August and September get a little crazy for me here.
It does. I love spring. I love the busyness of getting the gardens in and planting and watching my stuff sprout. And just, I love that busy. Fall gets a little crazier. Yeah, for sure.
Yes, it does. I was going to ask you, do you guys have, so we have here a Michigan Small Farm Conference. So they have like conferences and stuff for the bigger ag. They have a lot of ag conferences for these bigger companies, but Michigan has a Michigan Small Farm Conference. Actually, I think it might even be the Northern Michigan Small Farm Conference. I started going to that several years ago, and it's just for small farms. And I've met a lot of people there, and I'm still in contact with them.
Yeah, it's not something I ran across here. I wouldn't be surprised if we had that. Indiana's a big farming state, like small farmers too. So I'm sure it could be a thing here.
But yeah, so I think, I was kind of sad. I don't know about you. This is going to reveal my age a little bit. I was kind of sad when they got rid of the Yahoo groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could find stuff in there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I was a member in a few of them, which I enjoyed. And of course, they got rid of them and archived them. And so now you're kind of, you've got, you know, like you were saying, Facebook and Instagram, and a lot of them now have.
You could probably just link.
So many other social medias besides those two. But I'm in groups on several different social media platforms.
You were probably linking right to that Yahoo group from your MySpace page, right?
I did have a MySpace page, but it was very short lived. I don't even think I ever put anything on it. I think by the time I actually caught on to it, you know.
Yeah,
I was kind of saying well behind the wave.
Yeah. I was probably even late getting to Facebook. I kind of even put off that for a couple of years. And I thought, for the kids, we don't want to mess with that.
Right. I did too. And now, of course, all the kids are gone. They don't want anything to do with it. And it's all us people
people, yeah.
But I love Facebook. I know some people don't appreciate, and I understand why they don't, but it does have, you know, you have your group there. And
I love the ease of use.
It is. And there's, so many people there right now.
There's a lot of control that Facebook wants to have over you in those things. But again, everybody has it on their phone. Everybody can kick it up and be involved really easy. You know, I actually like Instagram better than Facebook, just because I love to just, it's so easy to snap a picture and just send it. And it's so quick and easy, but it's harder to build community on Instagram than it is through Facebook, I think.
It's interesting you say that, because I think I've told you this before. It's Instagram isn't my favorite platform, but I like Facebook more.
Yeah, I just like Instagram's quicker to post a picture, which I like.
Well, it's just fine, because different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
But
they can go together. They share in between and go together. But
And YouTube, of course, I don't know if you could really have much of a YouTube. How do you think you can have a community?
Well, I think communities are built. Yeah, I included it in one of the social media things because I thought my thought was you see these communities being built around YouTubers, not so because of the YouTube social media, but you see this following of people and then they put things together. I mean, this is how Homestead of America really came about, because all these YouTubers came there and started speaking and getting involved and sharing the information. And then they just had this huge gathering, you know, of people.
And so I'm seeing a lot of like specific YouTubes, the way they do something, you will see them on each other's YouTubes channels.
They're collaborating.
And I see that with podcasting too. Several of the podcasts I listen to, they'll have visitation from other people from the same kind of the same crowd. But then once in a while, you're introduced to somebody new and
I don't know how many times I've heard how they met was at a Homesteaders of America conference or another conference, that they ran into each other and got to know each other. And then they came on each other. So that happens constantly. So they're building community, and I don't knock on that at all. I think it's great. No, I've not been really involved with the whole Homesteaders of America movement. I'm not against it at all, but it's just, it's been hard for me to take the time to go and be involved in it.
That's mine too. It's most of them have been quite a ways away.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, always during times when I couldn't participate.
Yeah. There's a lot of good, there's other good conferences out there. I know John Moody does one. He started it down there in Cincinnati.
The Rogue Food Conference.
Yes. And that was interesting. And I would like to go to that at some point. I think that would be really good.
I think it was in Florida this year, I believe.
I think he's doing some different places. I think he's doing a couple, two or three a year.
Yeah.
I think they're doing one in Tennessee, maybe two. I'm not real sure.
I know the first one, my friends that I'm involved with, the homestead group that I'm pretty involved in, that's an hour away from me, hour and a half away from me, is Mark Baker, and he spoke at the Rogue Food Conference.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I talked to John, you know, here and there. We've jumped on the phone. We've jumped on the phone a few times and had some conversations. That was a great guy. I think what he's doing there is a really good thing too. And there's been some community built around that. He's real involved with Joel Salatin and some other popular people. So it's a growing movement for sure. So
I'm in one of his groups on Telegram.
Well, you know, he's actually an admin in the Front Porch also.
Yes, he is. I remember that.
He hasn't been, you know, he's so busy doing other stuff. He's not really involved in it a lot, but
he's also written, I think, at least three books.
Yeah.
And his wife's written a book. So
I think he's, other than you now, he's actually had more appearances on this podcast than anybody else, I think. I think he's been here four times, I think. He's been on here.
Getting to be an old hat.
I love John. He's a good guy. I mean, these communities, these larger communities, I mean, these events rather, they're a good way to build community too. Often it isn't super localized. It's more spread out, but in this world we live in, that's not such a big deal. I mean, a lot of what we're doing is more spread out
You can create, like, I would say I'm probably the only homesteader on my road. Mm-hmm. However, I've drug a lot of people from my road into my homesteading by giving them vegetables, or I've even given them plants. Like, oh, here's a tomato plant. You want to just go home and put it in a pot and have it on your porch.
I seen your picture you posted on Facebook, and you were giving some stuff to your neighbors. I think that's fantastic. Yeah. I probably drove a kid away from homesteading because I gave him that chili pepper to eat. But you know, hey, so what? You lose one, you gain four or five. That's just the way it goes.
If you can't find a community and you really desire to have one closer by or in your town, I think you can create one too. Yeah. You know,
it's not easy for some people. Some people just naturally, they're good at doing those kind of things, just getting out there and mingling and getting people involved. So, hey, let's start a group. And the next thing you know, there's this group with 50 people in it in a local area. I'm not really one of those people. It's hard for me to build that kind of a community locally. But there's people who are really good at it.
See, I enjoy that. And I'm fine with, like, I will find people maybe like you or other friends that don't necessarily want to do anything other than show up.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've even spoke.
Like, cool.
I've even spoken a couple of events.
And you, I'll do all that and you show up and, you know, once in a while when we're on a topic you're in love with, and maybe you can speak up if you feel comfortable. So
I went to a small little meetup one time and did a little talk on comfrey. We were talking about on the other episodes and just talking all about comfrey and all the benefits of that and stuff. So, I mean, yeah, there's opportunities to do things like that. And you don't necessarily have to be the one to put it together an event, but you can make yourself available to teach some skills or whatever. You can put that in somebody's ear and they might be an organizer, somebody who can really put something like that together if you're not that person. So
there's nothing saying that it has to be this large thing either. I mean, I have a friend that's very, sounds much more like you. She's very quiet and introverted. And oftentimes I will go to her house and we'll can or craft or do something just the two of us together. And to me, that's still community just because there's not 30 people. That's still, you know.
Oh, yeah. You get, you know, five or six people together.
And we met each other through when I had my Facebook page going. That's how we met each other, was through that. And she just ended up being local.
That's funny. I was, I had done a YouTube video one time talking about a book or something on a YouTube video. And this is just goes to show how social media or even YouTube can work to build a community. And this was years ago. This was, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. Maybe more. And I'm doing a little YouTube video on this book. And then a guy that I went to school with, like middle school with, seen that video. And he's like, "Hey, I know that guy," reaches out to me. And he's into homesteading and stuff. And next thing you know, we made a connection. And ever since then, he's one of them local guys. I mean, he's actually maybe about an hour away from me now, but we just connected and I mean, he's had meetups at his house before with a bunch of people. We've traded animals before. I got him involved in quail and rabbit. He's hooked me up with things and we just kind of go back and forth doing things. And that all started because he, you know, see me on YouTube and, you know, somebody he knew. So see? Yeah, how it's amazing how you can make those connections.
That is really fun.
So there's also like local, there's also forums online, which forums can be popular and they cannot be, like, some people hate forums. Some people still love forums. In some ways, because of Facebook, they're sort of a dying breed, it seems like. But then
I'm sure you're familiar with Paul Wheaton's Permies.com.
Permies.com. Yeah.
That's a forum.
Yeah. Paul Wheaton. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the best forums out there. Honestly, it's one that is so active. Like anytime you go in there, there's just posts constantly going up, and it's been, I don't know how old that forum is, but it's really good. And everybody should, if you're gardening or interested in permaculture at all, homesteading, it's one you should be involved with. Cause it's,
I think you can search it. Can't you?
Yes. I've been in that group for a few years and I probably visit it at least a couple times a month just to see what's new and what's going on or if there's a topic I'm interested in. But there's some good information in there. Some really knowledgeable people in there too.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other large ones. The one thing nice about when it's large like that is you have a lot of people with knowledge and it's easy. I mean, it's easy to find information.
I mean, it's a paid one, but the Abundance Plus community is getting pretty big. Yeah. It's actually getting pretty big, but it's one that costs, but you get a lot more than just the community with that cost. Yeah. You get the videos and all kinds of stuff.
And it does they do have a phone app now.
Yes. Yeah. And they also have a Facebook group too, if you didn't.
Yes,
I think they prefer that you would use the forum because it's why they've built it. I think it's a good and growing community and it seems pretty active anytime I've been in there.
It is. And I'm not sure if there's, I was trying to think of other ones. I mean, I'm sure maybe there's some local ones for people, but I just knew that the Permies one was just huge. And I've been there several times. And in fact, I've Googled things before, not even forgetting that it existed. And it came up. I'm like,
it'll show up in a Google result. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It will. If you just Google homesteading forums, you'll find several. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know how active all of them are. But there are some out there that I think they're fairly active and I love forums. I like them.
I do too. I mean, especially if you're into,
like, if they're active.
Yes. Or if you're into something specific, like you have a specific question about your quail. Well, you don't want to weed through, 5,000 comments about milk goats when you have a specific question about quail. And that's where forums get really nice, especially if they get subgrouped.
They're much more organized than a Facebook group where you have to do searches for a whole page. You got to work through a lot of stuff. Yeah. You have topics listed over to the side. You can find them. And again, you can make connections through there too. I mean, you can develop a friendship through a forum. It's one way to do it. I also find that when you do use social medias, Facebook, Instagram, MeWe is getting to be a popular one. I've done some things in there. Using hashtags can help you find things. It's a good way. If you can't find groups, just put in a hashtag homesteading, hashtag whatever your topic is you're looking for, and you'll find posts on that and find communities
based on that. My old person self forgets that hashtags are a thing.
Right.
But I am trying to use them more because they're very helpful. It's just hard for me to remember. Like my kids,
it started out a Twitter thing, but
my kids think about that automatically. They're like, "Oh, did you search the hashtag?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah,
yeah." That's right. I didn't. I used Instagram for years before I started using hashtags in Instagram, and now it's how people find you and you find other people. I mean, so it can be used to
follow hashtags.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So, and even Facebook is starting to utilize hashtags a lot more. It even uses them in the groups. Like if you put a hashtag on a post, it will put the topics in a group based on the hashtags.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
That's so much for my brain to count.
Yeah. There's a lot to it, but it's like, one of my groups.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So yeah, that's the other thing is with Telegram actually works really well that way for subgroups.
Okay.
However, if you get too many people in a group, it's really hard to follow because it's it's like a nonstop conversation.
Yeah.
But you can search if people put hashtags on things, which I think people are getting better doing. But if you wanted to have a specific group just about quail, for example, I actually like the way Telegram works. You either love it or hate it, I think. And I think that's a lot of these platforms. You either
I jumped in there and checked it out. It reminded me of Twitter to some degree. Yes. And I'm not a big Twitter fan. So
I'm not on Twitter. I've only ever been on. But so I think it's just depends on how your brain works and processes things.
They're all different.
Yeah. MeWe's probably bad or other, but it just is whatever works for you.
Yeah. I think MeWe is the closest one to Facebook I've found.
I think so.
But it's different too in some ways. I don't spend a lot of time in there. Some people have completely given themselves to MeWe. And I get that because people are just tired of Facebook's, the way they do things,
Yes, a little bit of censoring there. Yeah. I think that's why you've seen a lot of people go to either creating their own platform or to different platforms, because there's even alternatives to YouTube for videos. Because even for educational purposes, I know some of the homesteaders have had issues with when they process animals. YouTube doesn't want that on there.
Yeah.
So they've had to use other platforms. And I mean, it's understandable. That's what YouTube wants. But,
it's their platform. And that's the benefit of say building your own forum or something like that, which I tried one time and I did. I mean, I ran a membership. It was a forum. It worked. It was doing a lot, but it was a lot of work and it was just too much with everything that went on. It was like, okay, we'll step out of that.
But I think that at least I feel like community has made homesteading for me a lot easier because you can find, you can only find so much information and read it online, but it's a lot nicer. For example, some things are just easier to learn hands-on and go to somebody else's. Like it's really, I can watch all the chicken processing videos in the world, but actually doing it is different.
And that's the benefit.
Another homesteader that has already done it, a 1,000 birds, and you want to get into it.
Right.
You just call and say, "Hey, do you mind if I just come over and help you one day do this so I can learn?" Well, of course they're going to say yes.
Yeah.
And then you can learn. Yeah. And then you can learn how to do this. And it's a lot better than trying to read about it or watch videos.
Yep.
Yeah.
there's so many benefits to community. I mean, there is the learning new skills aspect. There's the teaching others. I mean, one of the benefits is you get to further the movement by being a help to other people too. I mean, you're not always on the receiving end. You can give. And I love that. I love teaching somebody a new skill or showing them something in my garden, having somebody come over and say, look at this. This is how you collect the seeds out of lettuce. I mean, I remember when I didn't know where lettuce, how that even worked, you know, I mean, it was such a simple thing, but just something simple, you know, how does that happen? Well, here's how you do it. How do you process a rabbit or a quail or a chicken? So there, you can be somebody that helps other people. You can be someone that learns those skills. You can, again, trade things in community. There's also just there for emergencies too. Like you was talking about in the beginning, you're sick or something's happening. You're going on vacation. It is so great to be able to call on somebody to help you or be a help to somebody that's in the same situation. So,
well, and even just the friendship, I mean, people knowing what it's like to, I mean, because sometimes it's hard for friends maybe that don't homestead to understand, oh, I'd really like to get together with you, but it's August.
And also,
I can't. But a homesteader is going to say, oh man, I get you.
Yeah. And just that inspiration and motivation from being around people who are doing it and talking about it and enjoying it and doing all the things that keeps me going. I find I have to listen to other homesteader podcasts. I have to be on YouTube videos. I try to watch at least a few YouTube videos of some homesteaders a week because it motivates me. It helps me, you know, it keeps me, you know, excited about it. Because it's easy to get wore down and tired and say, I don't want to do this for a few weeks, you know, but I don't know when it's around you all the time, you feed off of that and it does inspire you and motivate you and keep you going.
Well, and for me too, it's new ideas because I can't even tell you how many times I've been listening to a podcast and I'm like, well, I didn't even know that existed. Until maybe this year, maybe it was last year I learned, I didn't even know there was two different, like there was hair sheep and wool sheep. And my mind was blown. I'm like, you're kidding me. Cause I was like, I don't want sheep because I don't want to deal with the wool. Well, I don't have to.
You know?
And none of that I would have learned if I didn't have communities that, you know, and now that I started talking about it, I found out that a friend that lives not very far from our property, well, we have hair sheep. And I'm like,
there you go.
So now
when you do get them, you've got a connection that can help you learn the things that you need to know about them when you're raising them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it's just that iron sharpens iron. And
absolutely.
That community.
Yeah, it's a very important piece of it all. I mean, to have that community for sure.
And that's why I said, for me, I'm not going to say it works for everybody. For me, and my goal is interdependent with my friends and my family, my online community, my local community, just kind of, and I think it's going to look different for each person because each community is different.
Mm-hmm.
Each person is different. Each people have different personalities and needs.
Absolutely. So I think it's safe to say that when we say, so is it self-reliance and self-sufficiency or is it homesteading community? We can say yes.
Yeah.
The answer is yes, right?
Yes. Yes. There is no wrong answer.
you do need to strive to be as self-sufficient and self-reliant, but it doesn't not go hand in hand with community. They work together. You need community. It makes everything easier. It will make you a better homesteader. It will make you more self-sufficient and more self-reliant. And it'll make you a better homesteader for sure. I think. I'd like to take a few minutes and discuss a poll you put in the Homestead Front Porch Facebook group.
I did.
We were curious about how long should this podcast be? Last week went really long, like an hour and 20 minutes. And I even said in the Facebook, I did a live this week, the other day in the Facebook group. I guess it was last week. And I'm going to start doing more of that. But I posed the idea that, we'll probably need to shorten the podcast up a little bit. But you said, let's do a poll. Let's find out. Let's give the people what they want. And what were the results of that poll?
We have actually a pretty large, I can look at it on. Most of the people said they liked, so 32% of the people liked 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get to it here.
I got it up here.
Here we go. I found it. So we had 0% said 15 minutes, which I'm glad about. Short. I don't think we could have done it.
No, we definitely couldn't do it.
30 minutes was 32%. 45 minutes was 14% of the people, and 1 hour was 34%. And then we had the longer the better was 9%.
Yeah.
And then we had the appropriate time to cover the topic without being repetitive, 11%.
And that's probably true, because I've listened to some podcasts that were 2 hours long and stayed interested the whole time. I've listened to some that were 20 minutes long that I couldn't finish. So yes, I agree with that. But it surprised me that it was that long. You know, I actually thought people might like 30 to 45 minutes. It's funny to me that 45 minutes got the lowest percentage out of the popular ones, when it's in between the other two. Cause
it is interesting, isn't it?
To me, it's like, that seems like a nice place to settle. If some people, cause here's my thought. There's people who like the 30 minute podcast who won't listen to an hour podcast, but people who listen to an hour podcast would probably listen to a 30 minute podcast. So if you kind of in the middle, I think people would listen to 45 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think it's good for us. Maybe we could aim for 45 minutes, knowing that once in a while we're going to get a little bit.
Oh yeah.
We talk like right now, things. I think we're real close to an hour now.
We're getting there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I don't have a problem with doing long podcasts.
Right, me either.
I don't want to overwhelm people with too long of a podcast, which it sounds like most of our audience likes the longer podcast. But as long as we are covering the topic without being repetitive would be the
Yes. So that was why we did the poll, because we want.
Yeah.
We do this because we enjoy doing it, but we also enjoy helping people and providing with information. And so we want to do what they would like to listen to.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, we want you to listen to it all. And if it's too long, you know, we don't want to be just talking for the sake of talking or trying to do a long podcast. I'm fine with 30 minute podcasts, you know, but when you get two of us on here, even when I've always done interviews in the past, they've always went around an hour, you know, or more. When you get two people talking, they're just longer. When I would do podcasts myself, they probably averaged 20 to 30 minutes on average. So they were a lot shorter because I'm doing all the talking. So it's just the nature of the beast. But yeah, I don't want to go 2 hours on a podcast. We're not Joe Rogan podcast. We're not going to do 2 hours.
Not yet. No, not even close.
Well, I just don't want to talk that long. Nothing against you, Rachel. I just
For 2 hours. We got homesteading to do.
That's right. I got things to do. That's just the way it is. I think that's helpful information that we got from that feedback that we got from that poll. So I appreciate you putting that up in there.
Yeah. And also, if anybody has more feedback, let us know.
Yeah. Give us feedback. And also, if you have questions, post them in the Homestead Front Porch. We'd be happy to do our best to answer them on the podcast. Also, I'm going to start jumping in and doing lives, I think, at least once a week. And
are you going to be doing those on a schedule or I have something to share?
Yeah. Well, I think I will develop a schedule. I'm not sure what it is yet. I think I'll probably try to get a set time every week and do that. And just because I just want to give updates. I want to welcome new members to the group, and I want to maybe do a brief topic on something or just take some questions from the group. So if you're not part of the Homestead Front Porch Facebook group, there'll be a link in the show notes. You can join. We love having you in there. There's just a couple questions you got to answer yes to and you're in. It's not hard to be in there, but if you jump in, share about yourself, how you got into homestead. If you're not a homesteader yet, share what what your interests are and what you'd like to do as a homesteader. Share pictures and videos or whatever you want. We love seeing your homesteads. We love hearing about what you're doing. It's so motivating and so inspiring. I enjoy it so much.
It is. And if anybody has any ideas for podcasts or topics they would like us to cover, they can either put them in the Homestead Front Porch or they can email us.
Yeah, we had some great suggestions in that live from one person. So definitely taking a few of those into consideration that I think we should look at. So some of them I've done pretty extensive podcasts on already. So some of them we haven't.
I had a link I was supposed to share and I forgot about it.
Oh, in that, yeah. You did say something about a link in there, yeah.
I did.
So,
yep.
But yeah, be involved in there. It's there's a lot of stuff happening in there recently, and I have a feeling a whole lot more is going to be happening in there. So get in there. It's a fun group. And I think when we're talking about community, it's a great place. I've made local connections in that group, and you long distance relationship. This right here, you know, you and I doing this. So we, you know, been involved in that group, talking to each other and seeing each other post all this time. And here we are doing a podcast together now. Yeah, so I think things happen.
I can't remember how I found your group, but I joined it quite a while ago.
Yeah. I don't know if you was a podcast listener first or if you, I'm not sure. I think you would maybe listen to the podcast and then joined the group. I think.
I can't remember.
Yeah. I don't know either. Maybe. You was in there within a couple months, I think, after starting the group.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, be part of that community and be involved in some of these other communities. Find your people, find your local people and be with them and build community. And it will make homesteading more enjoyable, easier, and you'll be better for it in most cases. I do want to put a little disclaimer, though, when you're involved with local community, be careful.
Yes.
I think this is important to say. You're meeting people you don't know. Take people with you. Make sure it's a up and up thing. You're not going as an individual to somebody's house and they're the only person. Just use common sense. Might even meet in public the first time, or make sure it's a big event that you're going to with lots of people. Just be careful. You can make one-on-one connections, but meet first in public places and maybe take someone with you. And just use a lot of common sense and be careful, because it's a weird world. There's people that are not right. You know, so just, I don't want to see anybody hurt because we're saying go out and build community. Just
very careful.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with, like, when you're doing sales on Facebook and Craigslist and all those kind of things, you always have to just use a lot of wisdom. And I think it's the same way with this.
Yep.
We'll just throw that out there. I wanted to throw that out there.
That's a good point. Very good point.
Yeah. So I think we'll wrap it up there. What do you think, Rachel? You got anything else to add?
I think it's great.
Well, everyone, you, have a great week and happy homesteading, and God bless. And we'll talk to you next week.
And grow where you're planted.
There you have it.